So,
but it helps.
But it helps if they can imagine that you look like Skeletor. All right, so I am doing an interview with the lovely fellows of... That's right, I called you lovely.
Thank you.
Of, and fellows, that's more expensive.
Would you like me to call... No, not going to do that. so these are the fellows of Down in Front. They do a weekly movie commentary podcast thingy, correct? That's a good way of calling
it.
They do, and they've been doing this for quite some time. What one did you just record?
This would be
78.
We just recorded our 80th or 81st episode, and we have, as of right now, like 76 episodes online, one a week, like almost 2 years worth of weekly episodes. If you look at it in iTunes, it says like 6.9 days, which is not something that I'm proud of.
That was that was a hell of a week.
Yeah,
I think you guys should be proud of that because that's how I'm spending my next week.
Not sleeping?
Not sleeping. Okay. Just going with your guys. Just your voice is in my head the entire time.
I found out my mom does that. She listens to the show and then dozes off.
Oh,
yeah. She likes a little shocking.
Okay, so Down in Front, these are four nerdy guys. And
thanks, I think.
That's nerdy geek. That's another question I will ask later. I should add that all of these men are ludicrously talented, and it drives me crazy because they all do everything. Like, Teague is also an amazing musician, and he knows pi up to
40 places right now.
40. And he...
I don't think that's doing things.
Well, no, I can recite pi while solving a Rubik's Cube. That, sir, is in fact a verb. Solving. You see.
And the other thing I should mention is that Trey, Michael Scott, and Brian... Or Michael Scott Dorkman. What do you want me to call you in the interview?
I don't know. Just as long as it's consistent and partially my real name, I guess.
Loretta.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Well, I was just going to say nice things, was about their films all being on top 10 IGN fan.
Fan films,
yeah. On the IGN.
Top 10. Was it IGN?
IGN.
On the Time one, it was just you two guys, but on the IGN top 10.
Or we could just say you were number 5 on the Time one.
That's
number
right.
11.
Yeah. No, but did
for a while there.
Yeah, number 5 would turn out to be Your Lightsaber and You or something like
that.
Yeah, because the first time Teague sent it to me, I was like, why is there not a number 5?
Yeah.
Why is
and I think it's because I really got confused by Pink 5. You know?
That's exactly.
It's Pink 5 and then right to 6.
That's yeah. So Pink 5, RVD2, and
Indestructible.
There we go. All right, so anybody want to say anything else about their selves?
I think we've established our nerd cred, which is our policy, which is enough to
that's all that
be
really
qualified
matters.
For the interview, right?
Let me add a piece of nerd cred to everyone here real quick.
Uh-oh.
Brian made a movie that almost ended up on the space station.
Yeah, still working on that.
Dorkman has spoken on filmmaking panels at Comic-Con.
That is the thing that happened.
Yeah, as I did too, actually.
And George Lucas has personally filleted Trey.
Yeah.
With his neck.
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
It's Trey fuck the fold.
Wow.
Oh.
Might have to beep that.
Wow.
I don't know if we're going to be beeping.
Yeah. Are we?
I wonder what the etymology of fellatio is, if it requires the mouth or if it can be some other part of the body.
Where in the hell is this conversation going?
I just want to throw.
Is this the kind of interview you wanted to have?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, then now carry on. Then
I already fucked up your name how many times today?
That's fine.
And nobody else heard the Travis one, but it's been revealed now. So
but now we're talking about fellatio and George Lucas's neck. And if that's what you came for, then here it is.
That's exactly what nerd doesn't want to hear about. That
I'm looking up the etymology right now.
Okay. Thank God for the iPhone to solve these riddles.
By the way,
oh my, Wikipedia and the pictures.
Wow. Too much information indeed.
What's your next question, Stephanie?
Yeah, let's move on.
This next question comes to us from a fan named Teague.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember a certain point when you realized what the show was and how it ultimately go?
Oh.
When I wrote this question for us, I should lay out that.
I hope you have an answer for it.
No, I was just, when I sent Stephanie some questions, like, here's some stuff that we haven't really answered before in interviews and stuff like that I think are interesting. And what I was going for, it's basically because when we started the show, we didn't really have any idea what it was going to be. It was just going to be a bunch of, it's like, well, we did Geeksa, and occasionally we would do some commentaries, and people seemed to really like those, and I don't know why, but if we keep doing it, maybe it'll keep working. It was our Hollywood mentality years, and we're all very proud of them. But then at some point, it all changed. It became this weird sort of, it's a podcast with a directive. And the question was generally for everyone, because I don't even know how you guys feel about this, but when it started to become, something in particular, as opposed to just we're going to get together and we're going to talk about The Phantom Menace this week for some particular reason. Because these days it's much more about screenwriting and filmmaking structure and film theory.
Yeah.
And what your guys' thoughts are on that.
I think I know we talked about this on our anniversary show, how, you know, when we first started out, we none of us really had an idea. And, you know, Trey was kind of worried, like, well, we're going to do the movies that I worked on, and then where are we going to go?
What are we gonna talk
and
about?
I was kind of worried that we were going to do Back to the Future, Star Wars, and Indiana Jones. And once we got through those 9 films or 12 films, then we were going to be done. And, you know, where we would go from there. But at some point, we didn't find this stride of, okay, I think it started with, like, Phantom Menace and Ghostbusters 2, where there were certain movies that one of us really liked, maybe uncritically, like Phantom Menace for you or Ghostbusters 2 for me or maybe to a lesser extent Mike. And it started with the other guys going, no, this is crap, and here's why. And then it evolved from there into this thing where we took that same critical eye to every movie that we do now, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if there was ever a moment where it's like, oh, this is what the show is now, because I think we're still kind
when
of...
suddenly it clicked, and we all went, and the light went on. It wasn't a specific moment.
I think we're still, every time we do a thing, we're kind of figuring it out and being like, you know...
And there's still movies where we sit down and go like, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah, and we're like, for me, I was really interested in I wasn't involved in the... I did a couple episodes of Geeksa, but I was never involved
never
in those commentaries. And I had started to get interested in doing a movie commentary thing on my own, and I've been thinking about it for a while. And then at some point, Teague and I were talking about it, and he was like, well, we used to do those on Geeksa, and I was thinking of starting that up again. And I was like, okay, I will jump on and do those with you now, and we'll figure out some other thing to call. But it was, for me, the only important directive was that it not be another MST3K. That was the one thing that I was, in the beginning, always very adamant about. It's like, all right, it's not just us sitting here just cracking jokes or whatever. Like, that should be part of it, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
But we should actually be just talking about the movie. It shouldn't be something that's real. We sit down and plan and we time it and do the whole
thing. It's a conversation, not a improv.
It's not a performance. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Show, yeah.
So
it's also a lot of work. I mean,
yeah. Also, if we had to do that, the show would have gone off after three.
A lot of people just sit down and go, "Oh, we'll just make jokes throughout the movie," and oh, that's painful, painful to listen to, because the secret of MST3K is that it was scripted. I mean, every word of that was always scripted. It was not improvised at all.
And they would watch each of their films like
three or four times and come up with the riffs and write them all down and set them to time code and then just read them on the air.
Yeah, that's and we do doing. Not have time for that
no,
shit.
No, we do not.
So,
well, and the other thing I really liked about your podcast that I have listened
to. How much, by the way, how much can we curse on this
as
one?
As much as you want.
Okay, great.
But what I do really appreciate is that, like, when I first heard a while ago that you guys do these movie podcast reviews, commentaries, I thought along the lines of, you know, Mystery Science Theater and along the lines of just the ones that are on DVDs, which a lot of times are just people sitting around being quiet while they watch the film.
Even real commentaries are often boring as hell.
That's
true.
I think that's the other – it's an unspoken directive that we have that like we've never talked about, but we all kind of get it from listening to those. It's like, I don't care what it's about, just keep talking as much as possible.
And we do have a thing where we don't like to quote lines.
Yeah.
Where if you just go like, oh, this is a funny line, then we know we're in trouble. Then we know we've run out of things to say if we're just reduced to going, this is a funny line. That's the kiss of death for a show.
And then you all chuckle. Well, and I guess that could go into the next, this wasn't a question I planned, but sure, why not, which is your policy as the other one I was able to listen to today you guys recorded was for Silence of the Lambs, and you said that you don't do a lot of comedies or dramas because you
comedies,
you said something else too.
Comedies and movies
that are
just like
exceedingly well made.
This is awesome. Yeah. And what is there to really say other than awesome? Yeah.
Right. I mean, the problem with comedies is that if it's trying to be funny and is, there's really nothing you can say about it. If it's not trying to be funny and is, then you can. I mean, if it's a really funny movie, like, there are exceptions to this. Ghostbusters is a good example of a very solidly made movie that we had an opportunity to talk about how comedies should work and how when it's just funny for the sake of funny and you end up with Airplane, that's great, but it's not a substantive piece the way Ghostbusters is.
Because what can you really say other than this is why that joke works? Right. And it's like, right, you understand why that joke works. That's why it's funny.
With something like Ghostbusters, or I think people have argued on our forums and in emails about our commentary about Galaxy Quest, which I'm very proud of and I still like, because we spent a lot of time talking about nerd culture and also about conventions and Star Trek and all those things. Movies like Ghostbusters and Galaxy Quest, there's stuff to talk about. We really couldn't do a commentary for basketball because it's funny, and that's about it. Like, the only other comedies we've done that I can think of offhand are all really noteworthy for something else. The Mask and its early use of CG, and it's an introduction to the comic book movie wave that followed for 10 years and we're still in the middle of. Princess Bride is the Princess Bride, and we have to do it because it's the Princess Bride. And Team America, which we did because Trey worked on it. Yeah. Trey was one of the puppeteers on Team America. He was the other Trey.
Yes,
on Team America.
Yeah.
And it's a movie with puppets in it. Even if he wasn't involved, there'd be something
and
to talk about.
And visual effects. I mean, if it's got visual effects, we can talk about that. But
But I mean, the problem, it's really more modern comedies. I mean, I bet we could probably do Stripes or something like that, you know?
Yeah, Stripes is fun.
But or older stuff. But nowadays, comedies don't really... They have a very flimsy story and kind of a flimsy plot, but it's mostly just a premise and a series of scenes with jokes in them. You know, it's not a... something you can really sink your teeth into and talk about the movie is constructed.
We treat Down in Front as a weird extension of our various... It's a filmmaking exercise, what we do on Down in Front. It's not making a movie, but it's analyzing movies and understanding why they work. And that's why one of the words we use a lot when we're describing it is dissection, where we'll really take apart the parts of a movie and see if they work or if they don't work. And there's not much to a modern comedy to dissect. It's not necessarily trying to be a film that tells a story, as you know it does, but as much as like A Few Good Men. We just did Silence of the Lambs today. You're talking about
and A Few Good Men, which is hilarious.
No, that's what I mean. I was comparing
good
it to
lines.
I know.
Yeah.
But Silence of the Lambs is exceedingly well made. It's perfect. There's almost nothing to really talk about unless you're contrasting it to other works and figuring out why the movie works so well. And that's what we have to do in those situations. And frankly, it's hard. It's way easier to do Terminator Salvation or Ghostbusters 2
yes.
or Wild Wild West.
It can be a lot more entertaining to do at certain times. But, we've talked about in Chinatown, which we haven't released yet, but we recorded the other week, and Silence of the Lambs, which is today, which are much more non-genre classics, because we've started out and kind of stayed centralized to more of, you know, our background, which is science fiction and horror and other kind
Star
of genres,
Wars and stuff like
Star
that.
Wars, the kind of that field. And so now we're starting to branch into like the straight classics, so to speak, the Silence of the Lambs in Chinatown. That's kind of new territory.
None
for
of
us.
The gay classics, though.
We haven't done Philadelphia yet, but soon.
Forrest Gump, though.
Yeah, Forrest Gump would be good.
Totally gay.
We also have not a moratorium, but a kind of an aversion to films that have been kind of really done a lot. Like, everyone always wants us to do Back to the Future, and we all love Back to the Future. We just don't really know what there's left to say about Back to the Future that hasn't already been said by someone better than us already. So
that was one of the tough things about doing Star Wars is...
Yeah, what's left to say about that?
What can we say about Star Wars that hasn't already been talked to death about already? So one thing we don't want to do is just repeat behind the scenes information that everybody already knows.
One little random nerd cred fact that I have to throw out that I know about Teague and Brian are that they went on a tour of all the Back to the Future locations in...
The ones we could do.
If you go to IMDb, it says shooting locations right on the page.
Yeah.
You can plug those into Google Street View and see what they are. And we found like five of them. And we went to Marty McFly's house, Lorraine's house, George McFly's old house, Biff's grandma's house, the mall, and the high school.
And Doc Brown's mansion.
Doc Brown's mansion. But that's
which is a historical
house that's actually
here in
a thing. Planter house or something like that.
Dean and I actually just in general will occasionally go find a location.
Like last week, Brian broke into the Scrubs Hospital.
Yeah.
A few weeks ago, we drove up to the office.
I didn't break in. The door was open.
we drove to the office from the office. There it is. It's easy to find if you live in L.A. If you're in the Valley, just take Sataquai West, and it ends in a cul-de-sac, and that's where the building is. You'll notice it when you get there. Just saying. There you go. Take that home. You got something out of this. It's like going to a comedy show and taking home a joke.
I'm totally
going to
do that next weekend. Yeah. Find it. I think that's near me.
Yeah, awesome. It is. It is, actually.
It's really close to you. Just Sataquai West ends at a cul-de-sac, and that's where the office is.
Awesome.
And then a picture can be taken of Michael Scott at the office. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Now you're so good with the names, you're making jokes about them.
Yeah, well done.
That one's just... one that I'm sure he's never heard before.
I haven't heard it as often as you would think, actually. The first time I didn't used to watch The Office. I do now, and I love it. But the first, like, three seasons, I didn't get around to watching it. I didn't have TV at the time. It was at the Arclight. I, like, gave my card or whatever to buy tickets, and someone was like, oh, Michael Scott, like, from The Office. But you probably hear that all the time. I'm like, actually, that's never come up.
Never
is that really his name? You know, it's like
Steve Carell actually has a joke where talking about his character is like, if you don't know a Michael Scott, you are Michael Scott. And I was like, oh, good, I'm off the hook. Yeah.
Phew.
Nice. All right, so now I'm going to go to my lovely paper bag questions.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Which one is actually related to what kind of bouncing off what you guys were just saying? But you have some films that you did commentary on that really aren't anything you would expect from, like, a quote-unquote group of nerds or whatever, like Hurt Locker. What made you guys decide to do commentary for Hurt Locker?
Hurt Locker is sort of the Down in Front episode spirit sequel to Full Metal Jacket.
It really is.
Yeah, I pulled that one straight out of my ass, and it came out fully formed. It was a dream.
Nice.
We did Full Metal Jacket because it was Kubrick, and we can talk about that. And
because Kubrick is a whole section of nerdom.
Yeah. There's Star Wars movies, Kubrick movies, Indiana Jones movies. There's a category thing. You have to learn about it. We have the four guys that are here. Me, Brian, Dorkman, Trey started the show and did. We're responsible for probably in this configuration 40% of the episodes. But occasionally someone's busy or someone can't make it or someone hates the movie or doesn't want to be there or something like that, and we have to bring in other people. And we have about three or four guys. Dorkman's partner in Lightsaber Crime, Ryan, from Ryan and Dorkman. A comedian named Jake Lloyd. A guy that's a fight choreographer and a comic book nerd named Eddie Doty. And we have a production helper guy who has also been on a couple episodes named Matt. And Eddie and Matt are both Army guys.
Military, yeah.
Eddie, I don't think served, but Matt was in Iraq for like 4 years or something like that. He did his turn
Eddie,
in Iraq.
Eddie didn't serve in combat.
Right.
Served.
But when we did Full Metal Jacket, we brought on Eddie because it's like, well, you know, he talks about, he knows about war stuff. We can do that. And it ended up being this amazingly informative episode. It's like, shit, that was amazing. And then when Hurt Locker came out, that was right after it came out on DVD and just won all the Oscars. And Matt was there at the time, and Matt was in Iraq. So it's like, well, we should try this. It's worth mentioning, though, that though we did that, and we do a bunch of non-nerdy movies, we do, you know, interesting shit here and there, Chinatown, you know, Strange Love, that kind of thing. People, most of our fans don't actually like the Hurt Locker episode because we do way, way more talking about film than a podcast about Army would in when they were discussing the Hurt Locker. But for the most part, the Hurt Locker commentary is explaining what's going on, where the plot fails based on their experiences and how the protocols are wrong, and stuff like that. So we started with Star Wars. We're going to fucking end with Star Wars. I don't know. But at the end of the day, we'll do any good movie if there's something to say about it.
Okay. Along those lines, well, actually, kind of. You guys, have you ever thought of doing anything TV nerdy? And I know that you can't do a full series, but like choosing something like the very first episode of Star Trek or the very first episode of Firefly or something along those lines that have visual effects relevance that...
We have actually talked about doing the pilot episode of Firefly and a couple other things occasionally. It's something that we might do. We certainly talked about it. It's just never...
There's still more movies.
There's still more movies to do, basically.
We don't have a we're not doing television mandate, but we just have not done it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. That's the best way to put it.
From my perspective, at least, I mean, you say not doing whole series, but it's like when we do a film series, generally, if it's thought of as a franchise, like there are some movies we did like Jaws, and it had a bunch of sequels, but people don't even really think about them when you say Jaws. So it's like
people don't think of Jaws as a franchise.
Yeah, we could
the same way you think of Star Wars.
Yeah, if you say Star Wars, people expect you to do the series. If you say Jaws, they can accept the one-off, you know, kind of thing. But generally, if it feels like a franchise, we try and do all of, you know, get through them. I don't know. If we started Firefly, I'd be like, I want to do Firefly.
Yeah,
let's just finish Firefly.
It was enough of a thing to do all of Terminator and all of Alien.
Exactly.
It
took like a year to get through
that. That's eight chunks of 2 hours we did on just two movies franchises.
Imagine if we let's do Doctor Who. No!
Yeah. All right, now fun question. You guys do comments on some of your other ones, not this one, about drinking. During the commentary. So
favorite
favorite drinks?
Oh. Mm. I recently gave up drinking. Although I'm probably going to start drinking again at some point.
You gave up drinking on the air.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's exactly
right. Yeah, you
want
to tell that story?
Yeah, that was a beauty.
Not at all. All right.
Well, we were going to keep it a secret, but then you put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
my God, you posted it everywhere. You posted it on the Twitter. You put it in the show notes. You were going in the forum. You were going to add a stinger at the beginning.
Isn't that like the sixth step of AA? You have to
apologize to everyone repeatedly.
Yeah. I felt very, very bad about that, and that's why I gave up drinking. No, on Armageddon... It was Armageddon, and I had a bunch of gin and tonics and passed out on the show. There's not much of a story there. I just felt bad about it.
So the best part
of we had one fan of ours. People occasionally tweet about it. And he was like, "I'm listening to Armageddon. Is Teak having a stroke? Because he just started kind of swimming."
And then he was just completely gone. Yeah. And we just kept going.
We kind of referenced it obliquely.
But we didn't go teased. We didn't draw on him with magic markers or anything like that.
I think I made a joke about your mom, who is a very, very lovely lady.
Lovely woman.
And I was like, Teague, you have anything to say
you
about that?
You gonna defend that?
Nope.
The only time we broke down was, of course,
at the end when
Teague
like,
always does the intro and the outro, and at the end, none of us could remember how that went. You can listen to us on iTunes and buy a T-shirt.
And damn it,
and it was so obvious that we didn't know what we were doing.
You guys don't understand how complex that outro is. There's like 25 items in it now.
Clearly.
Yeah, so. I don't. So anyway, I like gin and tonic.
A lot.
And yeah, more than Armageddon, clearly.
In fact, we're instituting right now, it's a back-end thing that we're working on, a search function for the site. So you can actually search for Trey, and you'll see all the episodes that Trey worked on. Or you can search for BTS, and you'll find all the movies where someone in the podcast literally worked on the movie and has behind-the-scenes information on it, and you'll pop those up.
Which is really just a Trey search.
Yeah. Well, there's also... I've included Full Metal and Hurt Locker for Eddie and Matt.
Expertise or whatever.
There's also, I'm not going to announce what you can search for. There's only a certain number of tags, but if you do search for drunk, it'll pull up.
The ones where we were drunk.
If I put some Easter eggs. You're designing like 500 tags for every episode. I have some fun with it, but drunk will pull up The Princess Bride and, Contact. I got really shit-faced on.
Contact. There were a couple. There were a couple where, we were all kind of, whee.
Yeah. We had a drinking game for the
And court. I don't drink much either, so the drunkest I've ever been was a couple of these shows.
Is anyone going to say besides Teague favorite drink?
Well, I don't drink regularly, so when I have been drinking, it's because of whatever they put on the table when we're getting ready. So often it was, we haven't done the Mike's Hard Lemonade in quite some time, we were rocking the Mike's Hard Lemonade pretty hard in the early days of the show. And so I would have like one or two, fine. I think there was a show where I had three and things started to get a little wobbly around the edges. a little hazy. But,
I'm a screwdriver man by and large, and I remember leaning on that pretty hard for the Star Trek comedy.
It's funny because you rarely hear Brian doesn't
drink
much.
I don't get drunk very
and
often.
On Star Trek, he's a Scotsman. He's a belligerent drunk man.
I am not.
This Enterprise is stupid. I hate you and all your friends.
I still contest that was blown out of proportion.
And then on our forum, we had like a 25-page...
That was a dogfight.
All 100 of our forumers came out and screamed at us.
I'm still trying to get the blood out. For me, it all depends on the movie because it depends on how blasted I want to get.
Which was the one where you were like hella blasted, where you actually stood up front?
That would have. I think it was because
it was the.
Well, what happened was
it was the one we did after.
We had done The Abyss, and I hadn't. It was all you. Yeah. Like I just liked the movie, and I didn't have much to say. I think what happened was it was The Abyss first, and then Attack of the Clones. So. All I had to do was... the other way. It was Attack of the Clones.
You got blasted
then,
during Attack of the Clones.
And then I just set it up front in The Abyss when you
just,
took over
just
that.
Just sort of keeled over during The Abyss.
But, it was... That was wine. I drank, like, one of those big jugs of wine that you can get. I drank half of it.
Yeah, the liter.
And then I probably would have drunk more, except Trey hid it.
I hid the bottle.
He hid the bottle. While I wasn't paying attention, he took it off the table hid it.
And then which I've tried to do for Teague on several commentaries, but he'll just get up and go get more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I
got such enjoyment of watching you, like, keep searching around.
So there's that. Wine will do it.
We look out for each other. We're a family.
I enjoy margaritas. And if I just want to get a light buzz going, then I'll just like a Mike's or a Smirnoff or something.
I think it was Independence Day, or it was the Core. It was one of the live episodes. Now we do live episodes all the time, but we had live drinking game episodes, and people came into the chat room and had fun with it. And you drank rum out of the bottle for the whole show.
Wow. Yeah. Good rum time. Is really easy to drink straight. I like rum. The coconut rum. Some of it's other stuff is a bit harsh.
It's like a milkshake. It gets you hammered.
Exactly. A lot. Anyway.
That should be their tagline on their advertisement. It's like a milkshake
that gets you hammered.
You could put it in the milkshake and it wouldn't disturb the flavor.
Yeah.
Very much.
White Russians, man.
Exactly.
So now to the nerdy based type questions.
Oh boy.
All right. So I'll start off light, which is, do you refer to yourself as a nerd or a geek? And do you see a difference? Because I was having a conversation recently with someone, and I did a blog post about it too, about how there's certain connotations with each name.
Yeah, the etymology of this is complicated.
So keep it. You don't have to go into huge debate, or you can if you want. Yeah. But
I personally usually tend to think of myself as a geek, mainly because I have a T-shirt that says geek and has a silhouette of the Enterprise on it. Originally, geek is a circus freak performer.
Yeah,
so
bites the head off live chickens.
Quite frankly, I think it's akin to which would win, the Enterprise or Star Destroyer. It's just such a meaningless kind of question. That's like, we're all social outcasts. We all like, we're in the same.
No, but we're not
stuff.
Anymore. That's the weird thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Now there's a community, which you kids today, you don't know what it was like to be the only nerd in an entire school and not know that there were any other on the planet.
I had a Star Wars fan club.
Yeah,
in school.
I brought my Star Wars and Star Trek trading cards to school.
I go with geek.
I got involved.
Some weird elitism to the word geek.
You guys just don't recognize that I am your Rosa Parks, man. I sat in the front of the bus for you so you could live this life now. I had a dream. I saw the mountaintop.
There was a gaming club at my school, like a Dungeons & Dragons club. I started playing Dungeons & Dragons because that was the closest to a geeky club that there was. I didn't even play it, but I was like, those are the closest to the types of people that I want to hang out with.
I don't even want to play their stupid game.
I don't really want to play this game, but I will join the club and play the game. That's a fun game. I like it now.
In high school, they were taking yearbook pictures. You know, they take pictures in the gym, and it's just, they go over this bigger... Chess club, please come down for your picture. Burp. All right, cool. And just the whole day, it was a huge high school, and there was a bunch of... And I went down with my Star Wars fan club guys, because I started the Star Wars fan club at my giant high school, which, by the way, a year after I started the Star Wars fan club at my high school, Jake Lloyd came to go to my... The club had disbanded.
No, the real one. Not the one on our show.
No, the real Jake Lloyd.
The young Anakin.
He was... I guess he's 2 or 3 years below me, but I was leaving high school, and he was just coming to it. But we were taking pictures for all these different things, and at one point... We had taken pictures of the Star Wars fan club, and we're just walking back, and they said, chess club. We all just kind of looked at each other like, yeah, okay, cool. And we all went back in and sat down with the chess club guys, and they were like, oh, good, good. All three, Mo, Larry, and Curly, thank you guys. Do we have to pay you? Do we give you money? It's like, we were just fucking around. We were making fun of you.
Making a joke.
The Star Wars fans are way cooler.
But they were at that time.
Welcome to the world where Star Wars fans are cooler than the chess club.
And this you gave me a perfect lead-in to my next question. Ooh. Which is
without answering the first one.
That's what we do.
All right, we'll go for
it. Well, I call myself Dorkman, so I'm outside of that realm.
So you're the third category.
I would also say geek just because I don't understand math well enough to be a nerd.
yeah, that's the thing. I'm a geek, but I can't do math.
You have a degree in engineering.
No, I don't.
Don't you?
No.
There's the problem.
No.
That's why your plane isn't working.
Is that why you don't have a degree in engineering?
Yes.
I think
so much so.
I think the geekdom thing is a strong focus and passion for something, and then nerd is a very particular intellectual.
This is interesting because I define it differently.
I would say nerd is almost a subset of geek. Like nerd is the intellectual.
I would totally go the opposite. But of course, in my day we might have defined it differently. I always thought that nerd is someone who has an unhealthy fascination with things that are in that category. A geek implies a certain level of social inability to function in my mind. That a geek is literally the circus geek. My God, that's barely that's a subhuman category as a geek. Whereas a nerd is just someone who has this interest in some things that other people
think I've heard the distinction as a geek is somebody who's highly skilled at some specialized thing. But again, it's So many different people have defined the word. So many different ways.
I go with dork for the as like kind of a socially that's like. Yeah. Well, that's
see,
adorable.
See, in my era, we were all fags. Yeah. That's all they.
I like to do it this way.
We still do that sometimes.
If you were in the Jess Club, you were just a fag. There was no nerd or geek about it.
We've got geek, nerd, and dork. Indiana Jones.
Don't forget fag.
Indiana Jones.
In my day, fag.
Indiana Jones is a geek, right? We're going to give him...
He's not a geek, what? But well, fans he, of Indiana Jones.
Well, no, but I mean, when he's a geek. He's a professor of this whole thing, and he's really into it and all that stuff.
I don't
think it... Cameron Fry is...
I don't think it counts if you
he
can...
He has sex with women.
Yeah, if you're allowed to... If you're capable of punching someone, you're not any of them unless you want to be. Because who's going to stop you?
Right, if you can kill if you can kill a Nazi with your bare hands, you are not a nerd or a geek.
Cameron Fry from Ferris Bueller, I'd give him nerd. Or maybe just, just an outcast.
I'd say nerd.
Dork?
Maybe dork. Yeah,
dork.
Maybe dork.
Dork is better.
Dork implies the social ineptness. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, we've ruined your perfect segue, but do your next question.
I'll reset your segue. Stephanie, what was your next question?
Yeah.
Teague, the master of the segue. Yeah.
Well,
who on Geeks, every time he would have a semi-skillful segue, would blow it by saying, oh, this is an awesome segue.
Segue.
Well, then I technically blew it the first time I said this is an awesome segue.
All right.
So, my awesome segue, which is going to what you said about how geek and nerd not really all social outcasts anymore. The commodification of nerd geek stuff. And you don't have to go, commodification is a harsh word.
Only a nerd would use such a word.
My point is more along the lines of, so Comic-Con...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's no human would say words that way.
Really? About comics anymore and movies. Like,
God, because my God, talk about nerdy and comics.
Hey, who would want to hang out with those people?
Yeah,
I used to pretend to be Rogue on a regular basis back in the day. That's what I wanted. I wanted to.
Nerdy, geeky, hot. Okay.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I mean.
None of the other girls understood that it was hot.
Yeah, well.
Two of these guys have stood on the stage at Comic-Con.
You
were on a dais of some sort.
I've been on a couple stages. There was an evening about me and my stuff at Comic-Con.
It's a 12-stage program.
She didn't get to the question mark just yet, necessarily.
Okay, so my question mark, I guess, is with, this question could be 50 pages. Well, not 50 pages, but it could be a very long question. So it's more just, what do you guys, like... Nerdom and geekdom is not really... There are people that call themselves nerds and geeks that aren't really what...
It's what's called geek chic. It's people who never suffered for their passions, now putting on a shirt that says geek and being like, oh yeah, this was like Nintendo, right? Yeah, awesome. It's like, no. I gave myself calluses with that thing on my thumbs, all right?
Darkman, talk about Nightmare Before Christmas.
Nightmare Before Christmas is a good example. Not exactly.
If you listen to our commentary, it's a great commentary, and he gets really pissed at Hot Topic.
Because of Hot Topic, exactly.
Man.
Hot Topic is the kind of thing where there are people, and this is, the geek chic culture is this writ large. Yeah. Is the kind of thing where it's like you see all these people walking around with, Sally or Jack or something on a t-shirt, and they don't even know what it is. They just like, oh, that's cool. Yeah. It's like, that's from Emily something. Emily the Strange. Oh, this is Emily the Strange, right? No, it's Nightmare Before Christmas and how dare you.
You don't deserve to wear that
take
shirt.
That off right now. But actually, don't.
Not
in front of me. Yeah. Go somewhere.
There should be a quiz to make you eligible to wear that
exactly.
shirt.
Exactly. It's... I mean,
you have to have your geek license.
Yeah,
yeah.
You have to be able to write
and
an HTML page in hand.
I mean,
in Notepad. Yeah, or you have to pass a general knowledge 50 question questionnaire or something like.
And
that.
And then there's there's stuff like The Big Bang Theory, which a lot of people like, but from what I've seen, I'm like, this is the geek version of blackface. Is what this is on this show right now.
That's harsh. I don't know if I want to go that far.
Wow. But it's just
and Trey was the Rosa Parks.
I totally was.
You can get upset and annoyed about it, but at the same time, it's kind of good because now it's like, well, okay, I suffered for my passions before, but now I don't have to. Like, now there are groups of people who would have acted like I was uncool and tried to beat me up who actually are admitting that they like it too. And
right.
we can talk about it and stuff like that. And they may not be as into it as I am or whatever, but it's like people are people are more comfortable, even though they you know, again, didn't suffer for their passions or get beat up in high school or whatever. It's like people are more comfortable being passionate about things and talking about them. And
having their niche, whatever that niche is, regardless of whether it's traditionally geeky or not.
Yeah, so
animal porn is a great example.
So as a net benefit, I just screwed up the grammar of the sentence. I think there's a net benefit. I think it can be obnoxious when people are like, "Oh yeah, I'm a geek," and it's like, "What? No, you're not."
It's like, I have not seen you at one meeting.
I don't know what you're even. I don't think you. I could make any number of references right now. I can make a Back to the Future reference. I can make a Simpsons reference. And you would not understand a word of what I said, and I know it. You know, but
it's like a body snatchers thing.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. So you remember when Bart said this?
What's body snatchers?
Exactly. They point and shriek. Exactly. So
body snatchers.
And
I don't get it.
They're not going to get that either. So,
let's see.
But overall, it's like, okay, I can admit to being like really into this stuff. Like, I can publicly argue about whether or not the elves should have shown up at Helm's Deep and not get like my teeth kicked out in the parking lot or something, you know, for being a fag. So, overall, it's annoying, but overall, I accept it and I'm happier about it than the other way.
Hey, if it makes us more employable,
too.
Yeah.
Which and is more attractive another to women. Brilliant segue.
Yeah.
Which is.
You're good at this.
I'm great at segues, though I screw up the names. Yes, segues. All right, so, which is a good segue to my thought with regards to movie sequels. All right, you guys had a lot of stuff to say about Ghostbusters 2 in your commentary about it just basically being Ghostbusters 1 redone, correct?
And everyone got paid more.
More. So what do you think then about all the superhero movies, that, like Iron Man 2 and things like that, which
You can't really take them in aggregate. Like, it's kind of a case-by-case basis. Some of them are better, and,
it's true.
The Dark
X-Men
Knight
2,
is better than Batman Begins, and X-Men 2, I think, is definitely better than X-Men. But then again,
Spider-Man 2 is way better than Spider-Man.
But Spider-Man 3
went
totally...
No, I despise Spider-Man 2.
I know you do.
Spider-Man.
We need to do that
Spider-Man
one.
2.
We need to do Spider-Man 2 so you can explain to me why you hate it so much.
Can work out these problems.
We'll get to it.
But...
They're not really an aggregate group.
Right.
I'm sorry.
It's all about whether or not, and you can almost always just tell by looking, you know, if someone had a really good idea for, you know, it would be a cool second story to tell versus the studio saying, we have got to make another one of those goddamn things right away. And, you know, somebody said, well, maybe he fights... Maybe they build the Death Star again. I don't know. Fuck it. And you know, they just make another movie with the guy in the red suit, and the kids love it, right? And we make $1 billion. And often, sadly, they do. So there's no reason not to keep doing that. So I haven't seen Iron Man 2, so I don't know how it compares. But
I haven't seen Iron Man 2, but fuck it. Am I right?
Yeah, but no. In other cases, I mean, sometimes someone by luck or by, you know, endeavor will come up with a sequel I didn't feel like they just wanted to, you know, dig their hand in my pocket and get 10 more bucks out.
Run to the place where lightning just struck.
Exactly.
In general, it used to be that movies were made because somebody had a cool idea for a story to tell, and now, I mean,
well,
that's just not the case
anymore. And to be fair, I mean, that's just as much almost the audience's fault as anything else. I mean, you go, not only the fact that you're paying for it, but also people are going online and demanding. They're like, do a third one, do a second one, you know? And very few filmmakers and studios seem to be able to kind of resist that. They're like, okay! And they go do it. Whereas, you know... one of the few cases is, again, Christopher Nolan. He made The Dark Knight, and everyone's like, sweet, when's the third one coming? He's like, I don't know. They're like, no, make it right now. He's like, no.
No.
I'm doing something else.
I'm going to make another movie.
First of all, I got another thing to do. Second of all, I can't think of anything. So I'll come back when I can.
Yeah.
To bring that back to Down in Front, what's cool about the Ghostbusters 2 episode, and I think this is to answer the first question with the answer to this question, where the show ended up going from where it started was more of a workmanlike approach to making movies work and acknowledging when they don't. With Ghostbusters 2, we got out of the bashing of Ghostbusters 2 in the first 5 or 8 minutes and basically just went straight into a story meeting on the air where we said, all right, this is Ghostbusters 1 again. Let's write this movie over. Let's start from the beginning. Where can these characters go? What can the story do? What can the universe handle? And moving forward from there and developing a plot in the room on the spot. And it's really cool when we get to do that sort of thing. And, you know, if there's not a story there, like there wasn't for Ghostbusters 2, that's your best option for discussion on a commentary podcast.
Yeah. And personally, I've always...
Terminator Salvation's like that, too. It's like, this doesn't work. What could we do differently?
How could we make this work?
I've always loved the idea of movie sequels. Like, before they became a thing that was a guaranteed thing, you know, it was... whenever a sequel would come out to a movie I liked, I'm like, oh, cool. That's, you know, I love the idea of continuing a story and stuff like that. So I've always been fascinated with the idea of a movie sequel and the creative challenge and opportunity of being like, all right, we already did what was if it was really good, it's like, all right, we did the best version of the idea that we had because we just worked as hard as we could to figure it out. But so we have to come up with something else now. Yeah. But at the same time, we have all of these rules and mythology established that we can play within and tweak around. So
that's why Empire works.
Yeah.
That's why Empire Strikes Back is Empire Strikes Back.
So I always love the idea. In fact, when I was like, I want to work in movies and you know, write stuff, I was like, if I got pigeonholed into anything, I was interested in being pigeonholed into the sequel guy. People coming to me and being like, how do we do a second one? And I'll be like, all right. Here's the pieces you have. Here's what we can do. Yeah.
There's a really interesting blog post on the Down in Front blog where Dorkman basically repitched the Star Wars prequels and also redid the Matrix sequel. They should make sequels for the Matrix.
I did the second one. Right. I never got around to it. I should write it down so that I'm not just like those. I was in my Mike's Hard Lemonade days.
Yeah.
And I was very like, okay, so here's the fucking thing.
It was a dark time.
Yeah, there was a guy and something about a Matrix.
Totally
and,
cool and, thing happened.
But yeah.
Long story short, Matrix all the way down.
Yeah. So ooh. So I should type that back out and finish actually writing out the conclusion, the Revolutions version, but yeah, because that's just something that I'm like, you can do a lot with this, and it's fun and interesting, and someone else already did the hard legwork of creating the world, so
that's what I find the most interesting thing about the potential of sequels and franchises is there's a certain amount of overhead when you create a universe and rules and establish this whole world that you don't have to go back and repeat. It's like, it's kind of like when you have a superhero movie, it's kind of obligatory to do the origin story.
Right.
But in the second one, you don't have to deal with that anymore.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're and a phrase that I've used many times on the show, because it's true, is becoming is a more interesting story than being.
True.
So the story, and I said this, and this is true in real life as well, I think unless something really, really, really amazing happens, there's nothing that Obama will ever do in his presidency that will be more fascinating than how he became president.
Mm.
That's a story full of thrills and chills and reversals and amazing, you know, and oh my God, and a triumph at the end. And then he was just president after that. It's probably interesting.
And then the sequel would be,
you know,
Obama
the day,
2, yeah, Beyond the Palin.
Yeah, Obama 2.
Yeah,
Electric Boogaloo.
You're
walking in the Rose Garden, you know, and you know, the... The
Beyond,
you know,
the
story,
like,
yeah, the story of how Peter Parker became Spider-Man is so much better than whatever villain he fought the day after, and it's not that you can't do a sequel, but your job is actually harder in terms of making an entertaining story.
The characters have to go somewhere.
They have to, a lot of times, do something new.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of times they just exist, or like with Ghostbusters, it's like let's.
They're not Ghostbusters now, and they have to become Ghostbusters.
We'll make them become.
Yeah,
yes,
oh God!
But so. They have to. Yeah, we'll just make them become Ghostbusters again. Well, we saw that too. You can't really get away with that. You're not fooling us.
How about they become a better Ghostbuster? Yeah. Something. Just, you know.
So, you know, the story of how, you know, Joe becomes a dentist is going to be so much more interesting than the story of him being a dentist. So that's unless he's played by Steve Martin or Steve Buscemi. But the
Steve Buscemi is a dentist.
Steve Buscemi is a dentist.
That's a horrifying.
That's a thought, isn't it?
That's why I know Stephanie is a nerd in Babeland, because I made the little shop joke because I had the mic, but she made the same joke off mic at the same time.
That's awesome.
Hell yes.
Oh, it's ninja my joke, didn't you?
Yeah.
That happens sometimes on Down in Front.
But it can
way.
Be done. I mean, you know, there are cases
ninja
of sequels
jokes.
That,
yes.
that found ways to take that mythology and tell a new story that you didn't feel like, oh, I know where this is going. This is going to be blah, blah, blah. Right. I need to, you know, and strangely enough, you know, Jim Cameron is the one who's done it twice that we keep referencing, you know. Aliens is a great extrapolation from Alien, but a totally different story. Terminator 2 is a different story than Terminator 1 without, you know, breaking any of the rules that were established. You know, he's really quite good at that.
Yeah.
But it's happened. Other people have done it as well.
And the Abyss sequel was great.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
When they added that last half an hour, the second half an hour movie in the two movie series, it was great. It suddenly made the first movie make sense, which is what a sequel's supposed to do.
Or as William Goldman, one of our, you know,
the fifth member
down in front, but he just doesn't know it. As William Goldman... you know, always like to say, what the hell?
I bet he'd be like so angry.
He'd be so angry that we'd probably totally misquoting him and misusing him and say, this is not what I said. That's not what I meant at all. But
he says fucking a lot.
He always says that, you know, a movie story really is, you know, and maybe now it means something else, but in, you know, his thinking, a movie story should be the most important person thing that ever happens to that person or people. And you can only tell that story once because you can only have one most important thing ever happen to you in your life. So the most important thing that ever happened to Peter Parker was he got bitten by a radioactive spider and became a superhero. That's it. You tell that story, you're done. You have no more story to tell. So as opposed to a television series where you just have to tell the story of those characters week after week after week.
It's just
got to
be the most interesting thing that happened this week.
Well, that's, I think, one of the things that I love. One of the things that made me realize I was a nerd is that I love universes way more than just like a self. I mean, I do like self-contained stories, but universes, Star Wars, comic book stories in general, like the Marvel universe, DC universe, and still to today, like Fringe and things like that, things that create a whole new world that have infinite stories.
But even standalone stuff can create a universe that you can delve into because that information is there and stuff like that. I'm sure, we were not huge fans of Avatar, but even though it's just one movie, there's a lot of interesting stories you can tell in Avatar. I'm hoping Avatar 2 is one of them.
James Cameron's the man at making sequels.
Yeah, and the world, even if he didn't, though, I'm sure there's such a richness of information to that world that they're totally going to publish and sell to you that you can get really into.
That will be all over the floor of comics.
Yeah. You mean 8 minutes added that they re-released the film?
Without telling anyone? They were like, ooh, secret Avatar release. What was that?
Yeah, well, you know, I figured they were like, you know, we already made about $25 billion.
We already have all the money in the world.
Yeah,
there's not much of an economy left to pay for this, so the DVD's out now. Let's move on. Sequels are bumming me out.
Yeah.
All right. So back to the commentaries in general. Is there any movie you guys did and you did the full commentary, all of it, and then afterwards you were like, oh, that was just a bad choice. Why did we pick that?
Oh, yes. We all thought of the same thing last week.
Yeah. Yes. Interesting.
We have a great, a really wonderful, like legitimately good forum community and people that are interesting and they come out of the woodwork. It's like, where do these people come from? They're all smarter than us and no more, and they should have the podcast.
Yeah.
It's a really great community. And we had a poll.
Yeah, really.
We had a poll like, all right, what movies do you want us to do? And we just asked everyone, and I put together a graphic showing what was there, and like the top two were Dark Knight and Fifth Element. And we want to do like all the Batman movies, at least in order. If we do all of them, we'll do all of them in order, but we don't want to do the Dark Knight by itself. So we did the Fifth Element. We got like half an hour in, and we're like,
there actually is kind of a lot to talk about if you watch all the behind the scenes stuff and research the production design and stuff like that. I mean, you know, there's legitimately stuff to talk about, but
the question was, the thing is,
number one, we didn't really do that research. I mean, I knew that was there, but I couldn't have named any of the French guys or whatever.
So many of them.
They were all French guys.
But it's also because, you know, I guess another kind of unspoken directive, you know, I mean, we say it, but kind of never during the show or whatever. But the same reason we don't want to do Back to the Future, we were resistant to the original Star Wars. It's like, you know, anyone can read the IMDb trivia. Anyone can watch the behind the scenes or listen to the director's commentary. So we would like as much as possible to just be bringing our own perspectives to it.
Say something new.
Yeah, we can reference those things to say, oh, I found this really interesting, and then we can regurgitate something, but then launch it into something else. I think I said regurgitate, but
yes,
anyway.
You did.
You
okay.
Heard me.
New word.
You know it. Look it up.
Yeah. I dare you to refudiate it.
but
it's a perfectly cromulent word.
Exactly. But anyway.
Oh, that's Michael Scott.
So the problem with Fifth Element is we didn't want to first of all, we didn't do the research. Second of all, even if we had, we wouldn't have wanted to repeat a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then what's left for us to say is just, I like this movie. So it wasn't a great
– none of us had any great particular love or hate for Fifth Element.
Yeah.
And it, I think it just taught us once again that –
we should say like a more complex love because I love Fifth Element.
It's a perfectly acceptable, entertaining entertaining film about which we didn't have a goddamn thing to say.
Yeah.
And so I think that was, I hope that was a lesson learned that, you know, the audience, as much as we love them and want to hear feedback, should not be allowed to dictate what we do because what we do is what we feel we can do a good job with.
I think that was a mistake. It's a good idea to get suggestions because it's like, oh, you know, people bring up movies. You're like, fuck, I haven't seen that since like 1985, but I loved that movie. Yeah. I want to watch it again. But
Fifth
not
Element,
like,
we were all like, really? Okay. But we didn't have anything to say about
but
it.
But we don't want to know what the demand is because just because they want us to do it doesn't mean we actually have anything.
At least on Fifth Element, we were able to get all the way through the thing. Yeah. It's funny that on that poll, a lot of people have requested that we do a Tron, which is a classic. And we have actually done Tron.
We've done Tron.
And then, we didn't get all the way through it. And we literally just ran out of things to say.
Yeah, that was, I think Eddie wants to come on it and do it again. And I think we should try to get Tron done before Legacy comes out.
Try. We can try.
We can try again.
Yeah.
But that's definitely one where...
That was so funny. That was just... Yeah, that was where you guys, you know, I was the older dude in the room. And I'm like, you know... Guys, you know, Tron stinks, right? You know that, right? And they were like, no, Tron is awesome. You were five.
Yeah.
Watch it again, and you'll realize Tron is awful.
No, I'd only seen it recently, and I was like, this isn't that good, but surely. We'll have a way to talk about it.
We can talk about the nascent computer graphics and blah, blah, blah.
So clearly you all just need to get more drunk next time.
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been great.
We need to get really wasted.
Maybe Tron will just be our triumphant return to drunk form.
Drunken form.
I had surgery and stuff. I haven't had anything to drink in like 3 months. I want alcohol. I'm going to get drunk very soon.
Somebody get this man a drink.
Yeah. But
and a new liver.
Yeah. I might be. There are also some episodes possibly worth revisiting. I'd be interested maybe in revisiting Dark City at some point.
Yes.
I agree.
A contentious one indeed.
But. Mainly if there have been a couple episodes, if they didn't. If we really, really regretted them, they didn't go out. We're like,
We finished a couple episodes that have never been heard. AI, we did early on, and it was just a complete hard drive failure, which we've since resolved. We haven't actually had hard drive problems for like 30 episodes.
AI was actually, I think,
In AI, we actually started a joke that we keep doing, but no one knows where it came from.
Yeah.
What does it mean to
What does it mean to be human?
What this movie is really about is what does it mean to be human?
I also want to say that AI, going back to like the very first question, AI was the... Even though it was like only the second or third one we did, it was the first one where I'm like, "Oh, we're actually kind of talking about this movie and taking it seriously," as opposed to and no one's heard that. It just kind of started happening beyond that. But that was the first time that we were really kind of
where we
delving
sat
into
down
it.
With the directive of we're gonna
as opposed to just throwing back shots and being like, "Look at this shit." What the fuck is going on here with Phantom Menace?
I swear to God we did an episode of Forbidden Planet. I just don't know what happened to it.
We did.
Oh, I wasn't
but
there.
But that was pre
no, you were there.
Down in Front.
Yeah,
it was before
no,
Down
it
in Front.
Pizza.
That was an attempt. That was an experiment. That was like a workshop version.
Yeah,
that
I was
came
definitely
down in front.
Not there for Forbidden Planet because I've never seen that one.
Yeah, no, we totally did it.
All right, now some fun questions just about Down in Front. Goldblums?
All right. There's a whole glossary on Down in Front, and we use these terms. Some of them are of our own creation. Some of them are existing screenwriter parlance. And we had to make a glossary because now we just throw them – when we're talking about movies,
we just throw them out
and we added it to the website. And some of them are funny but still applicable. Goldblums are a metric of acting because Jeff Goldblum represents a known quantity.
Yes. I mean,
you can measure in Goldblums.
When you hire Jeff Goldblum, you know what you're getting.
You get one Goldblum.
Yes.
And
at the very least, you will get one Goldblum.
And Walken is Goldblum squared.
Yeah.
So that's how that... But like we have shit like... It's really cool. It sort of aids in understanding what we're doing with the show. We talk about things like magic beans and A Footprint in the Snow and killing the cat and all those things. Saving the cat. Both of them.
He's got a really mean cat, you guys.
Tesla.
Seriously.
Also, Tesla makes like unplanned guest appearances on the show.
You know what a Goldblum is. A magic bean is the one fantastical element you'll get in your story. Like, Trey always uses the example of Liar Liar, which is that for some fucking reason, the kid made a wish and he can't tell a lie. And if you tell them a story, they'll go with it because you have... An audience will generally give a film or a story of any sort... One weird thing that doesn't make any sense and doesn't actually relate to reality at all. And if you go through with that and tell a story with it, people accept it and they don't mind. And Liar Liar was a success, and that's because it's not too hard to digest. But when you start throwing in multiple Magic Beans, then you have a problem. Blake Snyder has a thing called double hocus pocus, which refers to the same precept, which is that if you have two Magic Beans, things stop working a little bit.
So there are different kinds of magic.
Yeah,
if you
mix
up your kinds of magic.
If in Liar Liar he couldn't tell a lie and then someone flew by on a broom.
And then aliens came down.
Yeah, then it's a problem. Yeah. Footprint of the Snow is interesting. That's when you do an effect really well once in the beginning, so you don't have to keep doing it really well because the audience just fills in the detail for themselves. We have all these different little terms. Goldblum's is still my favorite.
Yeah, Goldblum's is
so
good.
So some of them are more serious and others are just kind of outgrowths of jokes.
Yeah.
What was the first time you guys used Goldblum's?
Independence Day, wasn't it?
I think it was the fly.
We were talking about, because I've taken an acting class with Jeff Goldblum, so I think it grew out of that discussion.
The funny thing was we up until very, very recently, the episodes would just get released kind of willy-nilly. Like, we'd record them, and then some of them wouldn't come out for months, and others would come out the same day, and it was all mixed up. So we had a Jurassic Park recording in the can, and then we did The Fly and put The Fly out, so we established this Goldblum's joke, and then they put out Jurassic Park, and we never the joke never happened because it happened.
And there's a lot of Goldblum's jokes in that movie.
It's kind of like Star Trek, where the star dates aren't actually in order, and they have to explain that it's because the episodes aren't aired in order.
But you guys wouldn't get that. Oh wait, you would.
Hey,
nerds in Babeland.
Stardate
just keep
reference.
Throwing that out. I'll just keep.
Every time it you owe me 10 cents each time.
Oops, we should have said nerds were the coolest one. If that's
true. Oh, that's true. Yeah, nerds and
Babeland.
Anyway.
Oh no, it's okay. Nerds and Babeland.
It's okay. They can't throw a punch.
It's a big tent. Nerds and Babeland is a big.
It's a very big tent.
It's a big old yeah.
And I guess your question really was about people that weren't really geeks or nerds pretending to be that. You have a competitor, Evil Twin Blog, called Babes in Nerdland that are posers.
We originally were thinking of the title Babes in Nerdland, but someone had taken that. We haven't actually found them.
I was going to say, that one actually does make a bit more sense.
Yeah, no, it does seem like
no,
that's
if you
right.
think
more
about it, Nerds in Babeland, if you think, because there's this whole other debate that I don't even know if you guys have heard of, but there's a recent parody done by a group of four girls, Geek and Gamer Girl music video, parody of Katy Perry, and it turned into this whole huge debate about, because the four of them are like really, they're like sexy actress type of parents, girls, who are gamers, legitimate gamers, not actually just pretending to be. And then
we live in Olivia Munn world.
Yeah, they're that. And then, of course, there's a huge reaction saying, like, you guys are objectifying yourself. Why are you doing this? Why are you, like, taking all nerd women back? And a lot of other nerd women, including myself personally, was like, what do you want?
Taking nerd women back?
Yeah, like, what
where?
If they had dressed really frumpy, you'd be just as upset.
Exactly.
So what do you want?
Taking nerd women back.
I want to be outraged about something.
Yeah.
I just got a text from a listener. We had a joke. We were talking about on The Fifth Element having a tattoo on your head under your hair. And I just got a text from a listener who says, I'm an asshole. I have a tattoo on my head with hair grown over it. Listening to the Down in Front Fifth Element episode.
Oh, my God.
So one of our listeners was offended by that joke.
Like, oh, wow. Like, so like Gorbachev, you know?
Well,
as Gorbachev was starting to go bald, do you think he kind of went, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
What is that?
80s reference.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah, that's a whole other thing with women, nerd, geek labels. There's a whole
weird thing.
Well,
it's just all
about
getting your outrage on because you haven't, you know, had breakfast yet.
I mean, some people are Star Wars geeks and whatnot. Some people are outrage geeks and seem really like they just got to be pissed about something.
I am outraged
about
something.
Yeah.
What's going on? That.
Well, and once you have it online, anybody can say whatever they want, and no one's ever going to find you and do anything about it, unless, you know, you get stuck in a Jim and Silent Bob movie.
As Brian said one time, okay, getting on with the rest of my life in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah. Okay, and the other one I had to ask about was surrogates.
Okay.
We should go out on surrogates, because that's a good one.
I think it's intuitively obvious that all movies are really just a ripoff of Surrogates.
Yeah. You listeners should just go to the Surrogates commentary because it will be accessible to you. The joke is, when the Surrogates trailer came out...
Just the trailer. None of us had seen the movie.
I think I started the beginning of the joke and someone else figured out the way we're going to use it.
It was initially a Cracked commentary. Article. It was a Cracked article.
No, it didn't come from that.
I saw it around the same time.
They might have made the joke about it, but I don't remember that article at all. And
it was a video. Hit by numbers.
Oh, I hate fucking Gladstone. Anyway.
Oh, well, I suppose you didn't get it from
there
then.
That's right. basically, which is that
development.
When you watch, yeah, it's Deep Impact, man. when you watch the trailer for Surrogates, you realize that the movie is probably ripping off literally everything from every sci-fi movie of all time.
Yeah.
Trace dying.
Like every shot.
The mic fell out of Trace thingy and
it's
a Capulet now.
Carry on. I'll be fine. Anyway, go on without me.
And we started joking about it backwards, where it's like, well, we would watch Minority Report and go, oh, well, this is clearly ripping off Surrogates. The premise of the joke is that when you watch Surrogates, it's probably ripping off everything. And then we did. We actually fucking watched Surrogates, which is something we would never do. We have no, as sci-fi fans, as enthusiasts of, and it turns out, yes, that's exactly what Surrogates is.
Yeah.
And it's a very fun episode.
I thought that
we basically spend the whole time reverse engineering all the sci-fi tropes and pointing out where they come from. It's like a glossary in an episode.
It would be a great deal funnier if we didn't watch Surrogates, like, ever, or, like, for the next 4 or 5 years, and then
just
finally we did it at the end. But
well, I think we milked it for as long as it was worth.
Yeah,
milking.
I guess that's true.
Haven't you guys read the comic, though? Because it is based on a comic.
But here it's...
Everything is based
on a comic. We discussed
it
a little bit in the commentary.
The comic is ripping off Surrogates.
Totally.
Oh, how did
total
I not think
of Surrogates.
That? Last question, then. One thing I want to run out on is your super simple favorite geek thing, and you can't name a movie. Like, ooh, your favorite geek possession.
Oh, wow.
Mm. I know Brian has a bunch of good ones.
Yeah, I'm pretty awesome.
Our apartment is like a musical sci-fi Bennigan's.
It's true. It's like a Planet Hollywood.
No, we have a 7-foot Saturn V rocket sitting there over there. I mean, it's fucking bullshit.
With pieces from the launch pad.
We have an empty bottle of gin with Qui-Gon on it. It's called Qui-Gon Gin. It's like we have a bunch of shit like
this.
That
was good.
I have a homemade steampunk hat on my tiki bar.
You've got your little Star Tours toy.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
My favorite geeky possession. Probably my little Starspeeder 3000 from Star Tours, the original Star Tours, which Down in Front listeners know is a thing with me. Either that or, probably that. I love my Star Tours, and that toy is what I got.
Mine is probably the that globe of the planet Mars that I have sitting over there on top of Teak's piano.
Nice.
Next to his Mr. Potato Head Stormtrooper and Star Trek dolls, across the room from his authentic used space shuttle launch pad parts.
Okay, yeah. both the Star Trek dolls and the Stormtrooper Spud were both gifts, by the way. However, okay. the Mars globe I bought at auction at a Mars Society convention that I volunteered at. Between
Nerd.
My last year in high school and first year in college. So I was an active member in the Mars Society for a while, which I'm a huge, huge space nerd, huge Star Trek nerd, but also huge actual space program. And related to that, a huge like Mars and Mars colonization nerd. So
there's a small subset.
Yeah.
The Mars colonization nerds.
That is a family genus species subspecies.
Yeah. Do they have that convention at the Marriott in the room one? Or how many people show up for that every year?
Well, Mars Society isn't actually much of a thing anymore, at least as far as I know. I think they're still active. But
Marriott isn't much of a thing either.
Anyway, my Mars globe is probably my geekiest possession. Well,
favorite
geekiest possession, yeah.
I don't really have a lot of
stuff. Dude, you have lightsabers.
You have lightsabers that you use to make a lightsaber video.
But they're geeky to other people.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
to you.
There's that. Well, but it's not like... I don't even have
swords,
mine. I don't even have mine. I've got I've got swords. But Ryan holds on to the lightsabers for when we make something later. I guess it's pretty geeky. They're trying to make it mainstream now, but it's still pretty geeky. My favorite geeky possession is my Kindle.
Ooh.
But not your iPad.
The iPad's more of a
mainstream.
It's mainstream, yeah.
Yeah. If you have to wear a turtleneck to use it, you're just an ass.
Yeah. But Kindle I got when it was before they started doing TV ads for it and telling people it existed and alienating their customer base by being like, "Yeah, I buy $1 million sunglasses and I read a Kindle." It's like,
fuck,
have you seen those ads? They make me so mad. I've got my iPad and I read, I tried reading on that and I didn't mind it too much, but I'm like, I miss my Kindle for like books, for long form stuff. I really loved reading on it for, about a year until the iPad came out, and then I had the iPad for about 4 months, and then I'm like, I'm going to start carrying my Kindle again when I'm reading a book. So so I guess I'd probably go with that. I'm you know, learning about different kinds of e-books and stuff like that, so I guess that's a different level of geekdom, since you said we couldn't talk about movie-type stuff, that, you know, there's a different level to get into. Okay. Okay, gotcha.
I want to not revise, but addend my previous answer. Because when Trey was moving a few months ago, he just gave me and Brian some cool shit.
Oh,
he gave me
right.
An original print of the Little Shop of Horrors play book. And gave Brian...
A uncompleted, like, in the process of being written draft of a Next Generation episode, and the writer's
Bible. The actual writer's guide from Star Trek The Next Generation.
That's a tough call.
Original writer's guide that they would give to writers.
Another one I can think of is also reminded of stuff that Trey has given, although he didn't.
It's like I died and you guys got this for my will or something.
No, because you didn't give it to me. I've had to pay you. But
oh, okay, cool.
Is my collection of Cinefex.
Yeah.
Cinefex magazine is good
dating
stuff.
Dating back to 1891.
Yeah. The Malaysia issue is...
When they did the first Titanic.
Yeah.
I would say I've got about...
Oh, fine.
I've got about...
What are you, French?
40% of the... They were freedom filmmakers, not French. The Freedom Nouveau or whatever.
They've got to have some really amazing old articles about...
They do. It's awesome. Yeah. That's why. I mean, he was like, yeah, I was totally gonna.
I was just moving, and I'm like, I was gonna. I love having books and things, but I got so many goddamn.
So he was getting rid of his older collection.
I want to get a Kindle.
I
totally covet his Kindle.
I'm planning to volunteer for, like, because the Cinefex people are like, you should do a. People are telling them you should do a digital version, and they're like, "Well, there's a lot of involved. You got to do OCR and proofreading and layout and stuff like that." And I'm really tempted. If I had more time on my hands, I would get in contact with them and be like, "I will do it for free if you give me the issues. If you give me the issues, I will scan them and do the work and let you approve them and stuff like that. And I will do the work if I have them, you know, to work from."
Well, I still have about 20 or 30.
I've got a bunch that collection. I want to start getting from you. But okay. So it'd be, I'd have about half the complete collection at that point.
Yes, and see, but then they get more and more expensive when you, I just need number 17. That's a pricey one, yeah.
It's in good condition.
Trey, you've got to have a bunch of random.
You know, I'm having a hard time. Apparently, all the cool stuff I've given to you guys, from what I understand.
No, for those that don't know, Trey's worked on, like, every movie ever.
Yeah, well, that's not so much, but one man's, you know, trash is another man's treasure, as they say. So I'm like, I literally was like, I'm going to get rid of stuff. And all you guys are like, oh my God, it's a monster! You know, so it's like, well, that's great. But, you know, I was just cleaning out my closet. Like, yeah, you want this shit? I don't want Star Trek Writer's Bible. Who the care? I don't need that. So I'm really racking my brain. Like, what is my, you know, nerd cred thing? And there's probably something that I have in a box that I just...
George Lucas Award?
I've forgotten that the George Lucas Award...
You have a gold C-3PO and R2-D2 statue award from George Lucas.
Yes, that is true. I do have that's pretty good.
Was that the same day fellatio and folds and stuff?
That's how do you think I got?
By the way, what
do you think the award is for?
The etymology of the word.
Oh God!
All right, we're tying it in. It's a full three-act structure.
Remember how we started? Here we go.
It comes from philatus, which in Latin is the past participle of the verb filare, meaning to suck. So I guess technically, if there was enough pressure to create suction
in George's neck beard,
it could actually be feasibly referred to as fellatio.
In the skin beard.
It doesn't necessarily imply mouth. It just implies suction.
So a vacuum cleaner qualifies then.
Well, does George Lucas.
Sure. Yes.
He totally sucks. Take a drink.
Yeah. So anyway. Exactly. And so anyway, that's the end of my story, and that's my favorite thing. Whatever. Apparently, I flated George Lucas or something. But my second greatest treasure. That's a good example. I wouldn't think of it, but yeah, I have an award that George Lucas thought that my silly film was the best of that particular year. That certainly means a lot. That's a good thing. What else do I have that's cool? help me out here.
You had an X-Wing in your backyard.
I had an X-Wing in my backyard, but I had to build that. That's geek cred, though, when you build your own X-Wing to make a movie out of in the backyard. Right now, I'll have to say right now, just because, probably because it's just, it's a new possession that I just got, but it does have nerd geek connotations to me, is I just directed this Asylum movie. The Asylum, the makers of Mega This and Ultra That, and I directed a modern day version of Moby Dick starring Barry Bostwick, and it may or may not mean anything to people, this, but Barry Bostwick is one of the stars of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. He was Brad Major.
If you're calling yourself a nerd or a geek and you don't know
I'm hoping that that's still the case. Okay, so if I say Bostwick, you should have gone, freaking God, Barry Bostwick. Are you kidding me? Brad Major's asshole. Come on.
Yeah.
So I'm just hoping that you
actually, the first place I go is Spin City
and then Rocky Horror. And that's fair.
But I do get both in there.
And if you want to go for bonus points, you would think of Megaforce. And if you don't know what I mean by that, look it up because it's amazing. But I did the movie with Barry. Barry was the lead, and I got to be the director and direct Barry Bostwick. And he's a great guy, and he's fun and hysterically funny and great actor to work with and loads of fun. And his rap gift to me was he gave me a vintage toy from, like, the 70s. And I remember a friend of mine actually had this toy. I didn't have it myself, but it's a Scrimshaw carving kit, and Scrimshaw is whalebone. And it's actually plastic, but it's supposed to be whalebone, because you know that there's one thing kids love, it's carving whalebone. So it's a fake whalebone carving kit with a picture of a crusty sea captain and two kids in terrible avocado green 70s outfits. He's being way too friendly as he inoculates them into the world of Scrimshaw carving that kids love so much. And it's just ugly as sin. But it's an actual thing. It's completely vintage, in the box, intact, uncarved. Scrimshaw carving kit, because of course we did Moby Dick and the whale and the whole
thing.
Thanks,
Barry.
Exactly. And he signed on the front of the box, he signed, "Dear Trey, you are my wild and untamed thing, Barry Bostwick." And that is, right now, that is my, I have this and no one else has this. I am the only person in the world who has this.
That makes me love Barry Bostwick all the more, and that he thought to give something like that.
I can't not speak highly enough of Barry Bostwick. He is a very, very cool man, very funny and very entertaining. I just saw him again last week. He came in for ADR and just loved him all over again. There's a man I would fillet. George Lucas, no. But Barry, yes. Barry, yes, I would.
Everyone's got a list.
That's right.
And on that note,
we should end on that. Let's move
on. Can we plug the show before we go? Plugging the show, because we haven't been talking about it for an hour and a half.
We've done nothing but plug it. Plug her show.
Yeah. If you want to find Down in Front, it's...
Do your speech.
These personalities, but with more direction.
Yes. More of a focus.
It's at downinfront.net.
Not really, actually. Yeah, it's usually it's about
times less.
Usually just something to watch while we do it.
Dig on me?
No.
Just teasing you.
Downinfront.net. And you can subscribe to us on iTunes, get a brand new episode every single week. We have forums. You can, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can.
And
but,
we'd love to have girls in them could happen.
We have like four girl fans so far, so that'd be nice. Yeah.
Why don't you guys have a girl on the commentary?
Girls are stupid. We've
done a few episodes with a girl.
Because they're inky, and we have to sit next to them.
Yeah. And they make me feel funny.
Hooties.
Yeah. We've done a few episodes with girls.
Girls,
we did an episode.
We I think you are eminently qualified. You should be a guest sitting in on a show.
A lot of useless information.
That's perfect.
Clearly, you know,
like if you want to follow us on Twitter, it's twitter.com/downinfront. But apparently, like nobody that listens to us actually follows us on Twitter for some reason, which is an interesting thing that I haven't yet figured out. I plug it every week.
It's because there's nothing to see there.
Yeah, I know. It's just weekly announcement of the show.
Yeah, like if there was more content there and you followed people back. It's a weird thing. People actually care more if you follow them back. And they, like, So they're more likely to like, you should follow.
Twitter social contracts are still being written.
Yeah. But anyway.
And you guys have...
Yeah, if we
have a...
iTunes stuff, too.
We have iTunes. Yeah, you subscribe to us on iTunes and... Never have to worry about it again.
Facebook, Twitter, other things.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Down in Front. You can always find our episodes at downinfront.net. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You get a brand new episode every single week. Twitter, Facebook, /downinfront. You'll find us there. There's a big donate button. We're not asking. We're just saying. If you buy a shirt, that's great. We have several wonderful shirts for you. These enhancements have been done by Matt Fayette of Veda. You can always go to the forum and involve yourself in the conversation. And until next time, my name is Steve Christie.
Are we going to do it?
See, he has to start from the beginning. He can only do it if he starts from the beginning.
The very model of a modern major general.
Yeah.
Say it faster. Faster.
No, no, he tried that once.
I did that once. And I got very, very fast.
He fell and hurt something.
All right. So that's the information. Babeland. Yeah. Go ahead. Do your little outro.
Bye. I'm Brian Finifter.
Yeah.
Bye.
Mike Scott.
And Trey Stokes.
I'm T. Christie.
No, you did that already.
Well, I don't know.
And he's Brian Finifter, and you're Michael Darkman Scott. And I'm Trey Stokes.
Circles.
But seriously, check out the Wikipedia article for Fellatio. Because
if you haven't already.
They have little CG people.
What?
It's little toon shaded.
Look at that.
Pictures.
Oh, Wikipedia.
It's a black woman.
Wikipedia.
Right. So there's a little bit of
Wikipedia, you dirty.
They've
dirty
got a
girl.
Section on deep throating.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Is this regular Wikipedia?
This is just right on Wikipedia.
Damn.
It's a black woman. I don't know if that's good or bad for the black community. And I noticed it's not a guy. So there's a whole other level of complexity there. I don't know what Wikipedia
and
is
I
trying
am
to lay
outraged.
On you.
Yeah, I'm just...
I'm very curious as to what that discussion page looks like.
Yeah, I want to see...
And what edits have taken place.
Yeah, I want to see the edit history on that page.
We found...
This picture's not public domain.
Oh, and Blowjob redirects there. Just...
as well it should.
Yeah, good to know. Good to know.
So it doesn't go to Sarah Palin anymore?
Yeah.
Okay.
Whoa. Or George Lucas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the circle is complete.
All righty.
So everyone, all the girls should come and
watch
more.
Yeah, I'm sure they can't
more.
Wait to listen
watch
to them
more,
in front now.
Listen to them or watch them
this
live.
This shining
or
endorsement.
Or do it all. Because they're really funny.
Not that you
and
can
that's
tell
all.
From this.
Yeah, you need to work on your outro.
I don't have an outro.
I know.
Okay. It took a long time.
It took a while. It develops.
I have to first create it, and then I have to work on working it faster and faster and faster.
Exactly.
Maybe T can train.
He will. He has a workshop he does.
Do you have?
Through the Learning Annex.
Yeah, start the Rocky music. Let's do this.
It just comes from years of memorizing Technologic and Princess Bride quotes. Once you get it in your head, it's all downhill from there.
Yeah,
all
right. Thanks for
And that's a wrap.
Do you want to plug Nerds and Babeland in case this interview ends up anywhere else?
Yes. Come to check out our blog, nerdsandbabeland.blogspot.com. We're on Twitter also. Twitter.com/nerdsandbabeland. You can just Google us and find all of our shit. And we're also on Facebook as Nerds and Babeland. And shocker, yes, everything. Just look up Nerds and Babeland.
Cool.
You'll find us.
And what goes on at Nerds and Babeland exactly?
We talk about all things nerdy and geeky. It's not so much...
But with sort of a feminine kind of thing going on.
Not necessarily. Actually, the main idea of it is just that it's all girls talking.
Okay.
But
that kind of would make it...
Yeah,
kind of
it's not necessary. And that's what
it's
I was saying
like
earlier.
Us douchebags,
it's not
like
feminism. It's
no,
just
it's
got
a feminine
just a bunch of girls talking about... And actually, that's what I was saying earlier. Is the idea is just that we're nerds in a world... We're just
in
nerds
a world
too.
You never made.
In a world we never
lost
made.
Lost in a world you never made. In a world in a time.
Damn, that's good.
Yeah.
An outpost at the edge of space.
A lot of the girls are hardcore gamers, and I can't
nice.
Even remotely compare. I would love to be a gamer, but I'm too poor for it, so I just do comics.
Dude, an N64 costs like $10. GoldenEye. For $15, you can be playing GoldenEye tomorrow.
People are still talking about GoldenEye. That's still uh-huh. like a gold standard.
Well.
They're remaking it for Wii.
They are, and Ooh. I do have a Wii. But
Nerds and Babeland, you're disqualified.
What?
Because I only have a Wii.
Wii penis. Like penis.
Oh, I have a Wii. Ha
yeah,
ha ha.
And that's just
we got over that.
That's just a sample of the sparkling Noel Coward like wit you get yeah. at downinfront.net.
Oscar Wilde, lay down.
Oscar Wilde made a lot of dick jokes. That's actually not a comparison.
But yeah. Oh, and we have really cool do-it-yourself Saturday, and you should go and check it out because there's one from a few weeks ago that shows you how to make flesh wounds.
Oh, cool.
Really realistic looking flesh wounds.
Cool.
And we put up YouTube videos. We pretty much just do whatever we like that's nerdy on the blog.
Goggles.
Cool.
Yeah, nice. That's exactly what we are.
Cool.
Nice.
So thank you.
Bye, guys.
Good night. Yeah. I have to go assist an editor movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Now that's nerdy.
Sorry.